he wrote, "But from those currently reputed and supposed to be somewhat important, based on some sort of past, they were actually nothing to me." Kirk, I know you have joined us here.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Can you come up with anybody that he could have been talking about? Because he's now in this whole discussion of having gone up to Jerusalem for the Jerusalem Council, the Jerusalem Summit, which was, we know, was specifically, because Acts chronicles it, and so we know for certain that the Jerusalem Council was because those who were part of the called out assembly in Jerusalem, Shimon Kephesh, known to Christians as Peter, was the head of, and along with Jacob, whom they know as James, that this ecclesia, which was the one that benefited from Shavuah, the embodying of the set apart spirit, so that they could be effective presenters of the Torah to people, no matter what language they spoke, that those individuals who had lived with and witnessed Yosha, they were chosen by Yosha, had noted that Paul was preaching a message that was wholly inconsistent to Yosha's and to the Torah, to God. And they called him to Jerusalem to correct him. And so this letter in Galatians was written immediately thereafter, and he is now saying, "Hey, man, I must have prevailed. I'm not running in vain. They thought I was running in vain. They thought what I was doing was stupid and counterproductive. But as proof that what I wasn't doing was counterproductive is they didn't even compel Titus, a Greek, to be circumcised." And then he goes on this diatribe. He says that those who are reported to be somebody important because of something that they've done in their past, they were actually nothing to me. In that context, Kirk, is there any possibility that he's talking about anyone other than the people who confronted him at the Jerusalem summit, according to Acts, which would be Peter, Shimon Kephesh, Jacob, and the others that were the beneficiaries of Yosha's counsel?
As you can get nothing else out of it. Of course it is them.
Do you think that Christians are just oblivious to that?
They choose sides, and they choose Paul. I mean, that's
what... Yeah, so that what you're saying is that anybody, any Christian that's been to a Bible school, mm-hmm. that any Christian that has read their Bible thoughtfully, that any Christian who has who is a preacher and has been schooled to be a preacher, that without exception, they know that this is Paul ranting against Yosha's disciples, and that in this disagreement between Paul and the disciples, they've elected to side with Paul.
That's been, absolutely.
Yes.
Sorry.
Kirk,
yes.
I mean, Glenn, go ahead.
What's interesting is, I think I would suggest that there are a lot of Christians who mean well, you know, or in good faith or good conscience, as it were, strive to constantly deal with and tap dance around the obvious contradictions in the epistles of Peter and James, of Shimon Kephesh and Jacob. Because I myself did it. I have a Bachelor of Arts degree in Biblical Studies with a minor in Psych. I wanted to be a pastor one time, started a seminary. And always I knew I had this cognitive dissonance within myself about these apparent contradictions. And then you hear the story about a guy like Martin Luther, who's about as Pauline as you can get in the 1500s, you know, throwing a copy of the Epistle of James in the Elbe River, calling it a mighty strong epistle. You know, he was clearly totally final with Paul. You know, but there's a cognitive dissonance. They since they accept the canon of, you know, the canon of the Bible, the books that are selected, they feel compelled to somehow wrestle or tap dance or try and make these unfitting puzzle pieces fit. And
yes, like Calvin. Calvin wanted Peter's second letter, Shimon Kephish's second letter, Second Peter. He wanted it discarded. Yeah, he wanted it burned. He wanted it trashed because it points out that Paul was a complete fraud.
And Calvin and Luther are radically different in certain types of points in their theology as Protestant, and yet they are still thoroughly Pauline in all these other.
Mm-hmm. Of course, completely. And it would, of course, then which, if you're being rational, you'd have to say, wait a minute. If there is, if Paul, who has no ties whatsoever to Yahusha, is in a wholesale disagreement, I mean, absolute, complete discord with the disciples that Yahusha lived with, trained, and taught, and inspired. And we know that he chose them, taught them, displayed an example for them to follow, and inspired them. If Yahusha's disciples are wrong and Paul is right, what does that mean? What does that say about God?
He's very self-contradictory.
Yeah.
If
you really get to the core of it and you realize, as you say, that there's a discord between Paul and the disciples, and that's what this is saying, is that Paul said, I don't care that they spent 3 years with Yahusha. I don't care that he picked them. I don't care that they witnessed his example. They listened to him firsthand. I don't care that they were chosen and dispatched for this particular mission. I don't care because they mean nothing to me. And at that point, there is no way that you can go along with Paul without rendering Yahusha, the one that he's claiming to speak on behalf of, an imbecile, an incompetent imbecile.
Yes, but when people convert to Christianity, the first thing that happens is they're handed a Bible and told that it is a cohesive, inspired canon, that it is all integrated, it goes together, and, you know, therefore contradiction is not possible. So the very first thing they're taught to believe in is the canon before they're taught about Yahusha or...
So if they're told that there cannot be any contradiction, which is what I was told, that it was the inerrant word of God, and they're told that there can be no contradiction, why are we reading this contradiction?
Well, that's why you have to tap dance. That's why there's so much cognitive dissonance. That's why there's so much time, you know, parsing words and mincing words and trying to, you know, make metaphors or, analogies or just try to play word games to pretend that it all fits.
Yeah. One of the word games, fellows, is if you look at Christian sites and they try to explain this away, they'll talk about Judaizers.
Yeah,
and a Judaizer is somebody that wanted to take the mission of Jesus and make it apply to the law, and so if there was such a thing as a Judaizer, which they imply was like an evangelist for Judaism, why is there no recorded history of the Jews trying to convert anyone to Judaism? If there was such thing as a Judaizer, why is there no recorded history of anyone attempting to do that?
Jews have never been big on proselytization. If you want to be a righteous
boy
and on your...
You can accept their religion if you want to, but you will never, ever be solicited by them to become Jewish. They don't care if you are or not. They have never fought for or solicited converts to Judaism, ever. Now, let's just say that we were to define a Judaizer as someone who wants to tie the message and the deeds of Yahusha to the Torah. Would then not Yahusha himself be the foremost of all Judaizers?
Yeah, he tended to point people to the Torah, right? Well, they have Moses and the prophets. If they don't believe them, why would he believe?
Don't think I came to annul the Torah and the prophets. No, instead I came to fulfill them. Not a single letter or the smallest letter, the Yod, not a single stroke of the other letters of the Torah shall be annulled so long as the heavens and earth exist. I mean, how could you be more of a Judaizer? If that is the definition of Judaizer, the Christian definition, that's the thing that is so irrational. If they're going to define a Judaizer as somebody that wants to tie Yahusha and understanding who he is and engaging in what he promoted to the Torah, then the foremost Judaizer of all time, the only known Judaizer, as a matter of fact, would be Yosha.
Well, and people,
now, how do you have a religion where you're at war with Judaizers, and the foremost of all Judaizers is Yosha?
Yeah.
You're Jesus.
But if you don't value logical coherence, if you're not committed to logic,
mm-hmm.
then if you're willing to hold in tension contradictions, which most people are, religious or otherwise, religious, political, whatever, most people are not very thoroughgoing about learning logic or wanting logical coherence, you know, or the absence of contradictions, you know, and so consequently, people do accept, you know, try to hold contradictions in tension, and that's why, you know, you can't really be mentally at peace if you're doing that, because you've got these.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand how somebody might say, listen, I don't want to accept the reality of Islam. I don't want to accept the fact that Muslims are responsible for 99% of all terrorist acts worldwide. So I don't want to accept the fact that every time that somebody cites the Quran, they're inspiring the terrorism. I don't want to do that. It's just I want to ignore the evidence so I can hold on to this illusion that that Islam is a peaceful religion. I can see how people out of ignorance would choose to hold on to a myth like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're dealing with a religion that you pay for, that you devote your life to, that you are literally risking your soul and the soul of your children on behalf of, don't you think you would care about a contradiction of this magnitude where they're speaking of disrespecting the disciples? And if you want to take the Christian point of view, maybe it wasn't the disciples, it's Judaizers, but a Judaizer would have no past that they could claim, so it can't be. But if they were to, then the foremost of all Judaizers was your Jesus Christ. Now what? And how could you not care that puts you in a situation where it's impossible that your religion is trustworthy?
Why is it that nobody accepted it when Paul preached it? Because eventually he dies with nobody.
I mean, yeah, by his own admission.
We accept it so readily.
Yeah, I think the difference is they weren't ignorant then.
Yeah, of the Torah.
They knew of what he was saying, and they knew what he was saying was contradictory and wrong because they were aware of the Torah back then. They were aware of Yosha's deeds and his statements back then. Today we're not. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Let me repeat what Paul had to say, because I think it is, it's just so essential. This comes out of Paul acknowledging that he came up to Jerusalem. And this is a meeting that is discussed at great length in the book of Acts. And we know that he was called by the book of Acts up to Jerusalem because his preaching regarding the Torah was inconsistent with Yosha and also circumcision. And that's why which is the sign of the covenant. So he was brought up to Jerusalem because they wanted to confront him. And that Paul says, hey, man, they didn't compel Titus, a Greek, to be circumcised. So, ha, 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 I won. And then he speaks about these people being brought into the meeting that had no business there. And then he turns and he says, okay, beyond the spies, but apart from from those currently reputed and supposed to be someone important based on some sort of past, they were actually nothing to me. I mean, there is no way whatsoever that you can use anything other than Paul was besmirching, condemning the witness of Yosha's disciples. And that being the case, now what? And just take it to its logical conclusion. If it's Paul saying, the testimony of Yosha's disciples meant nothing to me, then doesn't that not mean that Yosha was an absolute failure in choosing people to witness on his behalf, that there was no reason whatsoever to live with these guys for 3 years? I mean, how can you have your God have any competency if Paul's review of their competency is accurate? So am I just being too logical, too rational, Glenn? or do you have an argument that would exonerate somehow Paul and Yoshe here? Because I can't see it. I mean, it's blatantly obvious that if Paul is right, that Yoshe was wrong in choosing these people, and he was incompetent in teaching them and training them, and that that Shavuah, which is where they were knowingly and deliberately given the set apart spirit, so that they would become more effective witnesses, that all of that was for naught, that it was useless. Pretty much renders God useless, doesn't it? Kirk, is this something you bothered you originally, or is it something that you just read right through? And was this one of the things that, wait a minute, how do I deal with this?
To be perfectly honest, I didn't know what to do with Paul, because from the very start, there was always Paul versus them and trying to reconcile them, and I couldn't really wrap my head around why you have to reconcile something if they're supposed to be on the same page. I mean, if we're following the same God, why do you have to reconcile that? I mean, I understand minor little differences and nuances of things, but come on. They should be.
But how could you have a New Testament and then have that New Testament besmirch the Old Testament? To say that, that Old Testament, that was counterproductive. It enslaves. It is impossible. It can't save. And then you have this New Testament that comes up with, totally ignore that Old Testament. You just believe. Everything will be fine.
But then you settle this. That's for them. This is for us. That's for the Jews.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is for the Christians.
So then they have to have a different God.
Yeah. Pretty much. A different deal. That's why I came.
Well,
unless
it's a different God, you can't have a different deal.
Oh, I understand, but I understand that now. But that's how it's sold. But let me tell you how I really think Christianity was sold. You know, to me, it was a feel good. The product they produce is kind of a feel good, kinded soul, gullible, yes, but mostly you're trying to produce a charitable giver. Because we all feel good if we're helping and doing and giving. And then so they repaint Jesus as a forgiving, healing, helping. Everywhere he goes, he's forgiving people, healing people, helping people, feeding people.
Mm-hmm.
And then so in the churches, is where you give the money, and they spread the good news about him, and they go around doing all these wonderful charitable things. Now, in actuality, it's probably 90% goes to them and 10% is spread around to look like they're doing something. But
and of course, you've got to ignore 99% of what he said
mm-hmm.
to come up with that conclusion.
It's a feeling. It's a feeling religion. Our honest...
What we're doing here, where we're talking about evidence and reason,
mm-hmm.
that they're irrelevant?
Allowed. Not allowed.
Irrelevant. Counterproductive.
Yeah.
Even Yosha's own statements. This next text from Paul is gibberish. I'm going to read it to you, because the one following that continues to underscore that Paul was saying that the testimony of Yosha's disciples was of no account. He said, it carries through. This is, the Greek word means it currently, actively, and actually spreads, really performs, drifting different ways. It presently bears in alternate directions. The face, the head, the person, the individual of the God, not the God of man, not take hold of. Now, I don't have any clue what he was trying to say there, but let's God of man that I'm assuming he's saying that the presence of the God of man they did not take hold of. But who knows? I mean, it's always a dangerous game to try to interpret Paul because it's impossible to intelligently translate Paul. Then he writes, because to me, the ones currently presuming and supposing of no account was their advice and counsel. So to me would mean to Paul, the advice and counsel of the disciples was of no account whatsoever. Now, is there any chance that those disciples then agreed with Paul? Would he say that?
Hardly. So that's not it.
It's impossible, isn't it? If they're agreeing with him, he's going to say, "Hey, you know, boy, they were right on their game. I respect what they had to say, and they were telling everyone how right, how good, how you know appropriate my message was." Would you say that their message is of no account if they were agreeing?
Hardly.
No.
It wouldn't make any sense, would it?
No, it sure wouldn't. So this is an overt admission that to Paul, to me, not to God, to Paul, the testimony of Yosha's chosen witnesses, his disciples, was of no account.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't that also mean that the book written by Matanya, Matthew,
mm-hmm.
would be of no account?
Absolutely.
Wouldn't therefore the book written by Yahuchanan, who Paul specifically denounces by name, wouldn't that also mean that the book written by Yahuchanan would be of no value whatsoever?
Well, I would assume Revelations would be the same too. But that's just
there you go.
Gospel. Yeah.
And then the book of Mark, which is the collective speeches of Shimon Kephas, Peter, that would be of no account either, wouldn't it?
It won't coexist with Paul.
So now you've got if you're going to believe Paul here, the only testimony that matters is Paul's.
Yeah, you have to make a stand on one side or the other. It's not.
So you throw away the Torah, you throw away the prophets, you throw away the Psalms, you throw away Matanya, Matthew, you throw away Mark, you throw away John, you throw away Revelation. You throw away Jacob's books, right? James.
Yeah.
And so you know, throw away 1st and 2nd Peter. And so all you would have left, your Bible, Christian, based on this, based on Paul's own testimony, the testimony of everyone else was of no account whatsoever. All you'd be left with is a really thin book. It's comprised of 13 letters.
Mm-hmm.
Your Bible is Paul.
Right. And that's pretty much
now, for someone to go, yeah, exactly what Marcion did. But Paul and Luke.
Yeah.
That was it. And Luke was Paul's historian.
Uh-huh.
And so, folks, you know, this twisted notion that 2 Peter somehow endorses Paul and claims that Paul's testimony was Scripture. And it says nothing of the sort. It actually says that Paul's reasoning is twisted and convoluted, and it confuses those who are ill-informed and leads them to their death, is what Shimon Kephas, Peter, wrote. But the idea that we should consider Peter's testimony favorably as it relates to Paul's letters, when Paul is saying you should completely disregard. To him, the testimony of the disciples was completely and utterly worthless.
Worthless.
And the person he's specifically addressing is the one person we know who confronted him,
mm-hmm.
who disagreed with him. Peter, Shimon, Kephas. I mean, this is an absolute fail-safe, full stop, you're wrong if you're a Christian.
So you're telling me no seminarian ever asked that same question?
No seminarian, either no seminarian asked that question, or no seminarian was willing to be rational, if being rational meant that they had to discard the religion that they were being trained to promote.
And that's no, and your conscience would not bother you. I mean, their conscience. All these people that preach, their conscience is just dead.
You see, a conscience is a unique entity, Kirk. The conscience is a seat of reason. It's that unique ability to discern between right and wrong. The conscience is the very place that we use logic. And so if you're going to promote a religion, as Glenn has said, where reason, debate, logic doesn't prevail, and if you're correct, Kirk, and I think you are, that Christianity, religious faith, is about feeling, not thinking,
mm-hmm.
then it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that the testimony that you're claiming to be the Word of God
what it means
cannot
to
be.
Me.
Yeah, it can't be. I mean, the very fact that these statements combine together demonstrate that all Christians have is Paul's letters, and that the rest of it Paul discarded, and that you can't, you cannot, under this basis, even quote your Jesus, because your Jesus would be the predominant Judaizer.
Yeah.
And therefore, you've got nothing.
Yeah, remember, he said go out to all the world and tell this story, so, you know.
Right. And he called the old system pornography.
Mm-hmm.
He's already called the old system pornography. That'd be the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. He said the Torah can't save. He said that the Torah enslaves. So you'd have to get rid of the Torah. You'd have to get rid of the Prophets and Psalms because they've got Torah throughout them. And you have to get rid of everything other than Paul's letters in the book of Hebrews.
Okay, now tell me where the stand of the disciples were that's enslaving. I mean, I made a little list.
You tell me something Yosha said that was enslaving.
What part? Let's say you got free will. You have you're confronted with five conditions and five benefits,
right.
Which are all
right.
Conditional on your free will choice to participate or not. You've got,
and the first statement that Rabbi etched in stone, I am your liberator. I'm the one that freed you.
I freed you from Mithraim and all the stuff that goes with that. You've got
from slavery, specifically.
Yeah, and then the only thing you're asked to do is, gosh, you have to take a day off and think about how lucky you are. Nobody cares about you. And then you got seven parties you ought to attend because Dad wants you there.
And because they're fun.
Yeah, and you're going to have fun. And
you're going to be enriched, and you're going to be made immortal, and you're going to be perfected during these and adopted into his family during these parties. That's pretty...
Your future's set. I mean, if you want to get smarter, all you got to do is read the Torah. It answers every question you could ever need to ask.
Right.
And Paul offers you freedom, though. So what freedom does he offer me?
Yeah. The freedom to be free of God.
Yeah, that's
the freedom to die.
That's really it. I can
die. The freedom to be misled. Yeah. I mean, Paul performs the same function that Satan performs. You know, Yahweh created Satan.
Yes.
And he created Satan to have, so that there would be the choice to reject God, which just seems utterly stupid to us. I mean, why in the world would anybody want to reject someone as wonderful as Yahweh? But if the choice to reject God wasn't promoted somehow, wasn't twisted somehow, then everyone would simply accept God. And so Paul exists for the same reason. You know, if you're not serious about it, don't care enough about it to learn, then, you know, to hell with you. You know, so that's why he's the plague of death. But, oh, my goodness, this is how in the world we all missed this for so long when there is no other rational, informed conclusion other than at this point, because of what Paul wrote, because to me, the ones currently presuming and supposing, these, based upon their past, and they were the ones he just said, were considered important because of their past. The disciples are of no account. Their advice, their counsel, their witness
worthless.
Was of absolutely no value. It's over. Folks, that one line is just over. I mean, the whole myth of Pauline Christianity crumbles. Your New Testament is trash. Your belief system is completely destroyed. With the line from the man who is the founder of your religion. Because if he's right, testimony, if the witness of the disciples was of no value and no account, then it makes the man that you have transitioned into the totality of God a incompetent nincompoop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he would be a liar because his testimony was that he was the living embodiment of the Torah. He would be disingenuous because he told us how important the Torah was and that it would never be annulled.
Mm-hmm.
He observed the Torah, and that would have had to have been stupid because, you know, that was counterproductive.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
and his picking of the 12 disciples was a complete and utter waste of time. It showed that he was incompetent in picking people. He was incompetent in training people. You know, so why, you know, if Yoshe in person can't teach someone, I mean, disciple means one who learns, who is taught in Greek. If he can't teach someone, then I guess God can't either, right? And the Torah, which means teaching, it's a waste of time.
Well, he used all
God's an incompetent teacher.
Yep.
You know, and I guess if that's your view of God, why would you want to spend eternity with him?
That's true. And they won't.
And they won't. Well, I mean, folks, this is black and white. Yeah, I would encourage you to get your favorite biblical scholar and have them debate this. And you have them, with evidence and reason, refute any of this. You can't do it. It's impossible. And if you're willing to be illogical to save your faith, you are squandering your soul and the souls of those you love. Don't do it. And before we run out of time, I do want to make a quick announcement. I mentioned yesterday morning that something had come up that might be distracting. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to be at the hospital in support of my wife. She's going to have some surgery, investigative surgery. And so I will not be with you tomorrow, but Kirk has volunteered to do the first hour tomorrow with Scott. Scott has volunteered to do the first hour with Kirk, and IQ Arasuli will call in the second hour, and Scott's going to introduce him so that he can share the message of truth that is so essential to understanding Islam, and that you know, I will be back with you on Monday once we learn the overall situation with my wife's health.
So what you're saying is I'll be deferring to the experts.
You will be deferring. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Kirk loves it. Yeah, Kirk loves being called an expert. You know, I think, Kirk, that it is fair, though, to speak highly of your expertise. I wouldn't use the title expert nor scholar because I don't think those terms apply to either of us. But we do have expertise.
Well, we know.
And the expertise we... Yeah,
we
the expertise
know
we have.
We know a heck of a lot more than
oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, billions of people around the world read Paul, and he has no expertise that would be of value to anyone. And the expertise we have is in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms of Yom. And while, you know, we're not claiming to be experts and scholars in it, what we're claiming is that... Yeah, that Yahweh is, and that if you share what he has communicated with us, you can learn some things that are really important. You know, and so there is great expertise that Yahweh imparts to his children. As a matter of fact, if Yahweh didn't make his children smarter, enlightening, if he did not enlighten them and teach them, then we would be, so if we don't claim to have expertise, what we're saying is that Yahweh's teaching is not useful, and that the author of the Torah is incompetent as it relates to helping his children grow. And I'm going to tell you, out of humility here, I'm not going to take that stand. I do think we're enlightened. I do think we have been educated. We've been enriched.
Mm-hmm.
And that you have expertise that is important for people to hear.
Okay. Well, I'll do my best.
Okay. You know, I just am almost awestruck by the bluntness of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me, Kirk, of the being awestruck that Muhammad would twice admit to being demon-possessed and that he would have his God admit to spending all of his time in hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just want to say, you know, the gall of Satan to do that. And then you read Paul admitting that he's demon-possessed, admitting that he's insane, admitting that he's a sexual pervert, and claiming that Torah made him a pervert. and him writing about the Torah in such derogatory terms, and you just go, whoa! You know, I'm almost dumbstruck by how negative a view Satan must have of humankind.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like he's thumbing his nose at God and said, you love these people, and yet look how stupid they are. I can tell them the truth, and it won't
right
matter.
In their face. Right in their face.
Right. I can tell them that the guy whose religion they're following was demon-possessed, that I had total control over him. And you can denounce him. It won't matter at all.
Yeah, we're 6 verses into the second chapter of Galatians, and Paul is dead. I mean, for any brain, anyone using their brain, he's totally dead.
Right.
Now, I was reading the 26 translations because they really cover him up or soft sell it. You know, versus what you have from Papyrus 46.
Yeah, Papyrus 46,
you know,
and
you have
the,
but once you even as you look at the English multiple English versions of each one of these verses, man, they really. I mean, you can find it if you're looking, but it's they certainly self-sell it. You know.
Yeah, the key word here is dokiai. It is used here to create presumption, opinion, supposition. You know, that you're claiming to be something, that's your opinion, but you're really not.
Mm-hmm.
And they know how to translate it, because when it is used of someone other than the disciples, they translate it, all of these Bible publishers, accurately. But they try to soft-pedal it here because of its implications.
Yeah.
May God bless you all.